Okay. Samach Gimel, Samach page 542. Mizmar Ladav B'Yosai B'Midbar Yehuda. Okay, so the most drill part of every mizmar is the first shir, is to learn when was this mizmar said, when, why, who, how. So obviously we don't seem to have any disagreement on this one, at least on the first one, this page, that it was David who composed this mizmar. Okay, everyone is very satisfied, and everyone seems to say the same thing, that David was running away from this historical event. He was fleeing from Shaul. Shaul was trying to kill him, and it was during those early years when he was running away, and David was very disturbed. And this mizmar, what it says is that what bothered David the most. So you would think if we would put ourselves in his shoes, I'm supposed to be the melech. I'm supposed to be sitting in the lavdal in the White House and calling the shots, and I'm in charge. And here, my opponent, Shaul, is trying to kill me. there's a challenge to his emunah, because Shmuel told him, you are the melech, not Shaul. And things are not going according to plan. Yet, the takeaway from this mizmar is, that's not what really bothered David. What bothered David was the lack of Yishuv Hadas. And now that I'm not at home, I'm running away, I'm running for my life, the concern that bothers me is I lack Yishuv Hadas and I don't have the opportunity to learn Torah and to daven and to serve Hashem. Who would say such a thing to me? Today when the person, has daigis, the learning is usually the last thing. First, you're worried about parnasa, you're worried about health, you're worried about your children, you're worried about shidduch, you're worried about all these things. And after everything is said and good, everything is fine and good, you're married with your children, and you have a good pension plan, you have this. Oh, now we'll come to the morning kollel. The last thing is, you're worried about learning. Oh, I'm able to get up early to daven in the very chashuv, daven very, very slowly. What's shocking over here is David is running for his life. David has many, many problems. But what bothers him is, I don't have the yishuv hadas to learn Torah and to daven to Hashem. That's an incredible thing. David in this mizmar is revealing his priorities in life. Not every mizmar do you get that sense. Because many of the mizmarim, dealing with David is living during a time where basically, David always had trouble, but David, he's secure, and he's dealing with issues, the issues of the day. So, he's focusing specifically on the topic of what the mizmar is dealing with. But here, David is running for his life, and we have these incredible, unique, very unique expressions of extreme passion and longing for Kirvas Elokim that we don't find in other mizmarim. And when it was all of this happening, not during his retirement, not during his youth, during the most difficult time of his life, where his life is in grave danger, and that's what he was worried about. I'm not able to go histapeach benachalas Hashem. I can't go to Kollel today, because if I walk into Kollel, they'll shoot me on the spot. Who's going to shoot me? My fellow Jews, because they think I'm a roidif. Again, with total nonsense. That is the so major...
In life too, when a person is in severe situations, they start analyzing.
Right, exactly. When people, the average person, when he's dealing with issues of life, he's not worried about going to davening. He's not worried about, I used to go to a minyan where they daven much slower, now I can't do that, now I have to daven be yechidah, so I daven a very quick minyan, I have to get up very early, 6 o'clock, 6:30, by the doctor, so I have to go daven at 6 o'clock. It doesn't bother most people, they're not bothered, okay, I can't go to my regular minyan and daven slow. They have much bigger daigos. And David over here at this time of his life, he's worried for his life. The only daigo that he has is, because I have to go work, I can't go to first Seder in Beis Medrash. I can't daven a long Shmona Esrei Mincha. Really? That's the first thing that bothers you about life when we're dealing with these issues? And that's exactly what it says here in this mizmar. It's an incredible revelation of what David considered to be his top priority. priorities in life. Okay, so I know someone who was accepted to Cooper Union. Now, I don't know, today, you know, it's a different world today. Let's go back into the 80s. In the 80s, Cooper Union is the Harvard of engineering.
Right.
Okay, it's in New York, you don't pay tuition.
Right.
They take you, now that you do have to pay tuition to go to Cooper Union, it is the most exclusive, select engineering school probably in the world.
Where?
Cooper Union.
Cooper Union.
14th Street.
No,
8th Street.
13th Street.
Okay, it was a limited number of students, and to get it was literally impossible, and whatever, and just to go show how elite they consider themselves, there's no tuition. Don't pay tuition. If they take you to the Cooper Union, it's okay. Like, you don't have to, they're talking about loans and scholarships. If you get into Cooper Union, you know, if you've been selected to join this unique select group. And this boy got into Cooper Union. And he goes to the orientation with the parents. He's like, wow, what a gedula. And this boy was learning in yeshiva. And he asked some questions that even publicly, is he able to, you know, take the classes like in the afternoon or in the evening? Because he doesn't want to shter his first seder in yeshiva. And they basically told him, no, you come to Cooper Union, you have to be here. So he said publicly, then I don't want to be here. I cannot give up my learning and my davening. I have to daven like a mensch. And his parents were there, and they were going out of their mind. They were going literally out of their mind. And they really thought, and like Nitra Fadaitai, who in the whole country gets into Cooper Union.
Right.
And okay, so I heard this story from his father many years, this is like whatever, long after. Then I spoke to him himself, this person is related to my brother, one of my brother's children married a relative. So he told me a lot of interesting information because he was there by the Simcha, and he told me, like, it bothered him his whole life. Like for many, many, did he do the right thing? Did he really, you know, he was very young then.
Where did he go? He went to a different engineering school?
Yeah, he ended up going to a different engineering school.
Where did he go?
I don't remember, he told me, maybe Polytech. Brooklyn Polytech.
City College Engineering School is a great school.
Yeah, it's also very good, but not like Cooper Union. You have on your resume Cooper Union,
well,
I mean, you're done. Okay, well, Cooper Union.
I saw the City College.
Yeah, Brooklyn Polytech is a phenomenal. It's also phenomenal. It's also a very, very high level. Very high level. Okay, whatever it is. So he told me he had friends there, you know, who did. And he says, you know, no one knows nothing. No one knows nothing in this, how this world works. Everything is just, you know, just talk. And he said, it bothered him. He told me it bothered him. Like, did he really do the right thing? So he ended up going to, I don't know where he went, I don't remember, he told me all the details, and his friends, his contemporaries, they ended up getting a job, a very, very good job in, I don't know, he told me, I forget all the details, where they ended up working, and he says, if I would have gone to Cooper Union, it's very, very likely, that's the natural trajectory of where he would have gone. And they make a lot of money and there's a lot of chashivas. But then what happened was, down the line, there was some shakeup and they lost their job and they ended up working for him where he worked. Now, I told you, you know, these stories, I typically don't like these stories.
Right.
You want to go living Emunah? Our school put out already 6-7 volumes and translated into a couple of languages. The whole living with Emunah is full of these stories. I don't go for it. I personally, whatever. I know Baruch Hashem, it's a bestseller.
Are you sure there was no tuition in Cooper Union?
What?
There was no tuition.
No tuition.
No tuition. I think now there is. I think now the world went woke. So now there is, but then there was definitely no tuition.
They only take like 120 students a year. They pick out from 120 people. I know a few people from Flatbush who went there, yeah.
Okay, it's a very exclusive. So you end up, because I don't, this is, yeah.
Well, they had 800 on their SATs.
My niece married.
So who went to Cooper Union?
By the time he was entered in Cooper Union, at that time it was a situation, he already had two international awards in robotics.
two internationally who was in robotics.
But now he has his own big company, which all the sports people and using, I don't know what, some software and hardware, which using
his technology.
Yes.
Very successful.
Also a graduate from Cooper Union.
Okay, so yeah. these are people who are geniuses. They're very, very successful.
Yeah, you have unbelievable. Moshe had a classmate in high school who went there, but the kid was rich before he graduated high school because he invented, Goodyear was having a problem with the tires, and he, while he was in high school, solved their problems, and Goodyear took him out of high school to work for the game of fortune, and he went to Cooper Union. After that, he just came up with a solution for their tire problem while he was in high school, and he was rich by the time he graduated high school.
The Israeli army goes into high schools in Eretz Yisrael, and they take the kids who are good in robotics at the 10th grade. They guarantee them education doctorates as long as they stay in the army.
Right.
Wow.
They call the program, I think they call it Teferet, which is the top kids, they get hired into the army at age 16, 17. They continue school, they do advanced training. In fact, this year, what's it called, Boys Town in Yerushalayim came in third in the International Robotics, 2 weeks ago.
Amazing. Okay, these type of stories, you know, I'm not a big fan because the real stories are the ones that, you know, they usually say that for every story in living with Emuna that works out like this, there are 100 stories where you have everything exactly the same, and it doesn't work out so well.
Right.
Doesn't work.
Rabbi so Appel wrote about it in this week's parasha. What is Shnei Asirim Gorolos? You know, Gorol Echad Lashem. You don't know which one it is, but he has a lot of misgivings about what he said there. And he said, in the last line of the Dvar Torah, he says, and if I'm wrong, may God forgive me. But he's Hashem Yislachli. And he finishes off. I think he wrote that after he lost his son. But I'm guessing that's why, because he was very
shaken up.
20 years old.
Yeah, we were just talking about him. I was just talking about him. I remember him on the day when he had that, when that Maisa happened. What was his name? Yeshaya?
Yeah.
Shaila. I was there in the hallway looking at him. He came on that day when David Alpert's son, he had a son, a beautiful person. He was 20, he was tall, he was very good looking. I was a little kid. I was waiting in the hall in MTJ. I remember that day. It was a Sunday. He came out of the Beis HaKisei. I was just sitting there in the hall waiting for my brother. My brother was in the choir with Yachmil Begun. Rachmil Begun was a Rebbe. Was a Rebbe on the lower. He was a Bocher. He wasn't yet married. He was a Rebbe in MTJ, and as a side thing, he had a choir.
Right.
Okay, the famous from Miami Boys Choir. So he had a choir. I was also in the choir once. He threw me out. I remember. He called me over and he told me, I can't be in the choir anymore because my voice is not you know just right for the choir. But my brother remained in the choir, and my mother told me you can't come home. I have to walk home together with my brother. So I had to wait for my brother to finish choir practice. So I was standing in the hall and water. It was very fascinating. Yehuda was an amazing person. And that day, Yeshaya Alpert came out of the Beis HaKisei, and I watched him. I was just watching him, and he washed his hands. And then I watched him say Asher Yotzar. And he said every word, Baruch HaTorah. I remember how he said it. And I was like a little kid, a little pipsqueak. And I was watching him shuckle, who's very tall, and say Asher Yotzar. I never, my whole life, saw someone say such a dignified Asher Yotzar. And then my brother came, went home, and later that afternoon, he had an aneurysm, and a couple of days later, he was nifter. And they had a big levaya in MTJ. I remember Lenny Grayer. Lenny Grayer was sobbing. He was like, he was maspid. They had audio in the whole building.
Right,
loud to the whole building, and they closed down East Broadway. There was a massive levaya, and it was a big levaya. It was an incredible tragedy, and by that levaya, they didn't tell Rav Moshe. They didn't tell Rav Moshe was very, very sick, and he was as big as Tom. They didn't tell Rav Moshe. And Rav Moshe, he found out. How did he find out? I don't know. Ruach HaKodesh, and he demanded from his mesharsim there to take him to the levaya. And they took him, and he showed up in the middle of Levaya. Rav Moshe walked in the middle of Levaya. It was such a tragedy. They're still talking about Ariyom Azeh, talking about this tragedy. And you know, when Rebbe Feinstein would go away, so he, this Yeshayla, he would stay with Rav Moshe. He slept in the bedroom with him. He slept in the bedroom with Rav Moshe. He was 20 less when the Rebbe went away, and Rav Moshe gave him a yarmulke. He gave him like a bundle of big yarmulkes. Rav Moshe still there. They gave him a yarmulke, and I think he was nifta wearing Rav Moshe's yarmulke, they say.
So, well, what's the person's last name?
Alpert. Yeshayla Alpert. Shaila Alpert. He was Rav Nissen Alpert's son. Rav Nissen Alpert's son. It was an incredible tragedy. And everyone knows you have David Alpert. He comes around here. David Alpert is his brother.
Yeah.
So you always talk. So you always talk about him. But I was talking to someone
Rav
else.
David lost more than the same way.
Also,
another brother, a few brothers.
Yeah.
Okay, she passed away this year, last year. Zeldi Alpert, his mother.
Yeah.
Rebbetzin Alpert, the Nissen Alpert's wife passed away this year. He died, and Nissen Alpert died tragically, like probably 30 years ago almost, also 20.
He was 63.
Very tragic.
Right,
very, very tragic.
Right,
what?
Half a year
after Moshe.
Right, he died soon after.
Very tragic. Okay, he was Rav Moshe's prized Talmud. Mama, she was Rav Moshe's right.
Well, the truth is, when I grew up, he was supposed to be the person that took over for Rav Moshe.
Really?
Died, yeah. Everybody used to say, and then when he didn't, he moved to Far Rockaway.
Became a rough. He got a shell with Far Rockaway.
That's what caused him to leave the Lower East Side.
I don't know all these politics. All right, with that said, so we got over here off on the side. We got sidetracked, but the point over here we want to make over here is that this Mizmar, the hidden message of this Mizmar is priorities in life. It's David's priority, no matter the world is literally coming to an end for him, and the only thing that bothers him is, I have to go daven shachars at my regular minyan. I have to go to Beis Medrash, my regular, you know, give my shir. I don't care the world is coming to an end. That's not my priority. It is an awesome revelation of priorities in life. What is the person's, what is the most important thing to a person? Okay, so here, Mizmal Dama Biyosib Abid, but Yehuda looks a little Hagdama. Let's look at some of the Mepharshim. Look, come on, say the same thing. Let's look at the Mitzudas David. Mitzudas David Bimid of Yehuda, Lehi Soser Mipnei Shaul. Shaul is closing in. He's in the desert, the Judean desert. Where is Midbar Yehuda? Does anyone know where Midbar Yehuda is? I have no idea. Does anyone know where it is? It can be many things. It can be Midbar Yehuda. It's a little bit too vague, I think, to really put your finger on it. From Yerushalayim, okay, fine. Midbar, that's where he was hiding. Let's look at Rashi. Rashi says Midbar Yehuda.
The story of the Zifim was also from there.
Midbar Yehuda. Okay. Midbar, look it over here, Rashi, Midbar Yehuda, Bebarech, Mibnei Shol, same exact thing, when he was running away. You know, the nuance of language is very important. You can't obviously compare Mitzudas to Rashi. Rashi is a Rishon. Every word of Rashi is Ruach HaKodesh. But, and Mitzudas, you know, Mitzudas is a more recent, more modern commentary, but the Mitzudas, definitely, we all know, he draws, he selects from the Rishonim. He never quotes anyone. Today, what the Mitzudas did would be criminal. This goes to show how times have changed, how the standards of plagiarism and giving credit completely have changed. Today, you look in the magazine, if you don't give credit to the one we got the picture from, you don't give credit to every little thing, it's like the most cardinal crime. Today, attribution to a degree that's almost insane sometimes, but that's the way the world is today. Everything, you know, yeah, you have to, all these sensitivities. Even though people do criminal things all the time, but when you want to do it the right way, yet the Mitzudas David, Mitzudas David obviously has selected from the Rishonim what he felt to be the most, whatever he felt was you know, pleasing, different strokes for different folks. Kashem Shein Parts Su Fame Shabbos Kach Ein Deo Same Shabbos. Yet the Mitzudas David never, ever, ever, ever gives attribution to where, to whom he selected his comments from. Never. Never. And the assumption is, you can usually find, whatever the Mitzudas David says, if you look hard enough, you can find a Rishon Someone before him, a few hundred years before him, said this, and the assumption is that's where he got it from the basic Rishonim that he had access to. Maybe occasionally, you know, you're not going to find this, and you can suggest it's his own chiddush. Okay, maybe, I don't know, I don't know if that's even true, if that's true. But he doesn't give attribution, and he quotes from the Rishonim. Now we all know that Rashi, whatever Rashi says, is Kodesh Kodoshim. There's no question about that. In fact, I never knew this. Maybe you knew this. I never knew this. Is that? Who told this to me? Kashrus religious Rabbi Eisen. Rabbi Eisen, from far. So he lives in the neighborhood over here. He comes. He davens. He has zonshin. He's a rav, but sometimes when he does, I see by davening sometimes. I talked to him, and he told me, he starts talking about the different stuzer of shach. Meir. That's not. I didn't mean that. Shach and shulchan aruch. Don't get worried. Shach in the Taz. Meir is a very big chassid of Menachem. What's his first name?
Eliezer.
Menachem Eliezer Shach?
Eliezer Menachem.
Man. Meir is a very big chassid of his. But besides that, I'm not referring to him. I'm referring to the Shach in the Taz. And he told me this, I never heard this expression called Hashboas HaKulmas. Did anyone ever hear this before? Hashpoas, hashpoas. What does that mean? It means to the extension of the kulmus. I'm a very big fan of Rashi. I like to read about his bio, his history, and there's not too much really, you know, they make up stories about Rashi, but I never heard this, and everything that I read about Rashi, I never heard this before. He said that Rashi, it's Yodua. That when Rashi put his pen, the kulmus, his quill, onto the paper, and he pressed down, and he thought, the pen wrote by itself. Rashi did not actually have to go to the effort of writing the words. It was miraculous. And Rabbi Eisen is a very down-to-earth person. He's so down-to-earth, he's so cynical, and he's so very tough. People complain about him that he's too tough. He's a very, very real down-to-earth.
He said to me that when... He said, I had to give him a message one time that some people in his neighborhood, where he's, you know, in the five town, they want to kill him. I was asked to give him because he was being too tough. He said, that's good, because Rabbi Palm, he said, told him that the more people that hate him means the better job he's doing.
So he told this to me, I don't know where he got this from. He says to me that Rashi had this thing called Hashboas HaKulmas. I even went back to clarify, because I thought he said Tiferes HaKulmas. No! Hashboas HaKulmas. Which I said, what does that mean? Explain to me. He asked the Mamish. Rashi put his pen on the paper. It wrote by itself. Holding in his hands, it was Ruach HaKodesh. And he told me that the Shach, not the Taz, the Shach, who was much later, hundreds of years later, also had this miraculous, not maybe on the same level as Rashi, of Hashboas HaKulmas. There are a few Yechidim in history had this. I don't know what this means. I'm playing over here words, but the point is, whatever Rashi says, Avi, you don't need. Everyone knows that Rashi wrote Al Pi Ruach HaKodesh, and Rashi. It's interesting the nusach here. The Mitzuda is very recent, not very, but pretty recent, relative to Rashi, which is 900 years, and Rashi said this, and the Mitzuda is drawing from Rashi, and Rashi says Boireach, and the Mitzuda says Lihi Soser, he is hiding. It's a very different word. That's a very different concept. When you're running away, it's not the same as when you're hiding. When you're running away, you really have no Yishuv Hadas. When you're in hiding, you're in hiding. Okay, obviously you're not at your peak. You're not at the top of your game. But it's not the same. It's not the same as being boy reach, fleeing. When you're fleeing, you read these Holocaust stories. People that ran away for their life. The sense you get is when you're on the run, you're oismensch. You totally don't have any yishuv adas whatsoever. When you're in hiding, when you're in a bunker, okay, it's not a pleasant experience. Now, obviously, dealing with a lot of it's a nightmare, but it doesn't have the same connotation, the same horror as the word of boireach. Okay, this is important. Right.
There's some expression, you could run, but you can't hide.
You could run, but you can't hide. All right, yes. Interesting, yes. It's true. All right, let's go over here to what is over here. Now look over here at the Malbum. Just jump around a little bit, the Malbum, the first passage, to get a little bit of a flavor of what's going on over here. The Malbum over here, Pasuk Aleph, Mizmar, on page 542, in the middle of the page, Tefillah Estavel HaMalbum, Be'er HaInyan, Mizmar Koitev HaMizmar. What does it mean, the Koitev? It means the essence. The essence of the Mizmar, Lehagid by Roiv Tishukasai El Hadvekos. This is what really we spent at the beginning of the Shiran, is David's intensity, his intense yearning to connect to Hashem, Ho Eloki, his intense spiritual yearning, add to the degree She'ozav Milizkar Kol Inyonim Hachoim Riyim. He completely in this Mizmar forgets about Gashmias. You're running for your life. Where are you going to get food? Where are you going to get clothing? Where are you going to get weapons? How are you going to survive? Here, David is running for his life. And the only thing he's concerned, when David's running, he's not just running by himself. He has people with him. He has a whole army with him, people, all his followers, and the only basic necessities. You would think, no, now you have to go worry about food, clothing, shelter, and all these other, no, couldn't care less. The only thing that bothers him at this moment in time is what? Is Rak Belokim Dovka Nafshi. The only thing that he's concerned about is spirituality. And indeed in this Mizmah, possibly from all of the Mizmah in the whole Tehillim, we have the most intense expressions, the most passionate expressions of yearning for spirituality. Okay, like He'eloki. Now soon Lag Ba'omer. Hatana, they always write Hatana Ho Eloki. Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai. Look at all of these posters. Hatana Ho Eloki. I never knew what that meant. It sounds like he's God. The God, the Tan who's God, Eloki. Eloki means spiritual. And he says the same word over here. Hadvekos Ho Eloki. The Dvekos, the spiritual connection. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is called the Tana. I don't know who invented that. I don't know if that's not a Talmudic term. Who invented that? Coined that term?
Shimon Yochai Eloki.
So what? It's a very dangerous thing. You know, it's a very dangerous thing to talk like that. But they write in all every single poster the Tana Ho Eloki. The Tana by itself means your Kodesh Kodashim. The Vilna Goin said. The Vilna Gaon, who is, I don't have to give him my 2 cents on the Vilna Gaon, okay? But the Vilna Gaon said that he can fathom what it meant to be, okay, it's not a good example, what it meant to be a Tana. But he cannot be masig what it meant to be, the spiritual level of what it meant to be, the simplest water carrier in the time of the Nevi'im. The people living during the time when the prophets lived, even the simplest Jew walking down the street and the lowest level of the social ladder, the lowest rung of the social ladder, the Vilna Gaon said he cannot even be masig the exalted spiritual level they were on. Cannot be masig. We can't even masig what it was like to be like a Moshe Feinstein. Okay? And the Vilna Gaon says he could have supposedly he said this, I don't know if anything is true or not, people make up a lot of things, but it's an interesting thing anyway, he can fathom what it was like to be a Tana. That's quite a statement, okay, to say such a thing is all, but you see from that statement that a Tana, what a Tana was, so who's asking you to add to the word Tana, Ho'eloki, the godly Tana, the Tana that was filled with spirituality, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Okay, the other Tana were not godly. We're not godly people. I don't know. Maybe this is a rabbinic. This is a rabbinic term. We do research. When is the first time that expression has been used in Klal Yisrael? The Tana Ha'Eloki, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Any event over here, the Malbim used that word in reference to David. David's yearning for spirituality is the only thing that's going to be mentioned over here in this Mizmar. Let's look over to the first pasuk, see some things over here. Let's see what else is on the page here. Look at the Radak. The Radak says, Kishahaya Boyreach on page 543, Kishay Boyreach Mimne Shol Umidbar Yehudu Hu Midbar Zif. Okay, so Midbar Yehudu is the same place as Midbar Zif. We know that where that is. Excellent. If not, fine. Aleph, look at the Ibn Ezra. Mizmar Ledavarach Mimne Midbar Tam Zan Mizmar Shahaya Nich Saf Leleches. He was yearning. Word Nich Saf means to yearn. Leleches El Kiryas Yarim Makoim Ha'arayim Bavur His Tatroi Mipnei Shaul. He says it a little bit different, which is really what the Ibn Ezra really hits the nail on the head. The Ibn Ezra really hits it, and he says over here, Dov, the same thing. He's running away because of Shaul. And what is he yearning for? He's yearning to be in the presence of the Aroin Hashem, to be in the presence of the Shechina, to be in the Beis Medrash, in the Beis HaKnesses. And everyone here says the same thing, but the Ibn Ezra, in a very unique way, really hits the nail on the head. Where does he want to be? He wants to be with the Aron. Where was the Aron at this point in time? In Kiryas Yearim. After Noiv and Givon, Noiv and Givon were destroyed in between Noiv and Givon until it was brought to Ir David, until the Bayis Rishon, it was temporarily located in Kiryas Yearim. Okay, now look over here and look at the one more, the Sipurno, same thing. B'yoyse, b'midbar, Yehuda, b'odech, b'nei Shol, same exact thing, Shol. And he adds over here another beautiful expression to really bring out, to capture the essence of the Mizmar. V'hoya mis'aveh. You notice that everyone over here has a different word for yearning. Nichsof, mis'aveh. What the Rashi says, the Rashi didn't say anything, the Mitzudah stuff didn't say anything else, what the Malm say? Teshukasai. Okay, look at that. Everyone here has a different vocabulary. All of these words mean pretty much the same thing. A teshuka, a taiva, and nichsof. Three words which pretty much mean the same thing. An intense, passionate yearning to be within the vicinity of spirituality, of Ruchnias, Sipurno, B'midbar Yehuda Barech B'nei Shol V'hoya Mis'aveh Lehistapeach B'nachalas Hashem La'asoik B'atoyra U'va Mitzvahs. Okay, I would give the reward to my lowly, who am I to open up my big mouth, to the Sipurno. Okay, that's the last one that we're going to learn from all the Mepharshim over here. They all say mamish the same thing. David's running for his life because of Shaul. Where would he like to be at this moment in time? The average person would think, I want to be in my palace. I want to be at home with my kinderlach and with my, my malchus and doing my daily activities. Nope, that's not what David wants. What bothers him the most is this disturbance in life prevents him from matters of spirituality. And some of the Farshim say it, some don't say it. And Ibn Ezra says he wants to be in Kiryas Yearim, in the presence of the Aroin HaKodesh. But the Sipurno says it in very beautiful words, Lehistapeach. What does that word mean? It means to absorb, like a sponge. He wants to absorb. Lehistapeach benachalas Hashem. To be in the location of absorbing spirituality, ruchnius, la'asoik in the nachal of Hashem, la'asoik b'toira uva mitzvahs. Like everyone over here who comes to share, you come over here to learn Torah, you come to learn divrei Elokim Chayim, lehistapech b'nachlas Hashem, to be oisek in Torah uva mitzvahs. Everyone over here is a nitzoitz of David. It's mamish what it says over here. Okay, so that is the backdrop to this mizmor. And now we go. So what does it say in the mal? What does it say over here? The Targum doesn't really say much. Targum says a lot, but at least you know. Now. It says Tushbachna LeDavid BeIdan at the time. That's an important word, BeIdan time. Do you notice that the Targum has a little bit more of? You're getting to get a certain pattern in the Targum. The more you learn Targum, at least the Targum on Tehillim. I don't know who wrote this. It's not Unkelus. It's not Targum Yonis Ben Uziel. I don't know who wrote this, but this Targum. Obviously, it's Kodesh Kodashim. There's a pattern. He's very into the word time, zman. He loves the concept of time.
What
Praise. The word tishbach means a mizmor, means a praise. I've come to pick up this pattern. Very often he employs the principle of time. We had this in the last couple of days a few times. Chos and Kala, when they get married, at the time when they get married, their mazel is weighed on the scales. Then we learned that Achas Dibur Hashem Shnaim Zu Shamoti, at two times. Moshe spoke to the Jewish people twice, which means Mishneh Torah. No one said that. No one said the concept of time. When it came to Shaduchim, no one translated the pasuk that when a person gets married, at that time, when they get married at that time, their mazel is reevaluated, is recalibrated. The sum is greater than the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. At that time. The Targum, we have to pay attention and appreciate Targum on Sefer Tehillim is a big fan of the principle of Zeman. Okay, no one else said that word over here. All the Mefarshim don't say the word time. Hey, he's running away, this. Why do you have to say the word time? Where did he say the word time? In the Pasuk. Mizmor David, when he was, b'midbar Yehuda, tushbachto le David, b'idan, zman.
B'yoso.
So b'yoso doesn't mean a time, it's an event.
When he was.
So none of the Farshim used the word, the Targum is extremely precise. If Targum didn't need to say the word zman, b'idan, the word b'idan means a zman. And there's something to this. B'idan mehevei. If the Targum said l'david mehevei, who just said the word? Tush bachta l'david behevei. Behevei means b'hiyosoi. The word b'idan is superfluous. The Targum over here is making a statement. What the statement is, I don't know, but again, I'm telling you, there's a pattern in his commentary on Tehillim where he always comes back to the principle of Zeman. Bimid Bira Debitchum.
He wants to say it's not the Matzav Shihuaya, but
the Zeman. So what does that mean?
It's different times because he
we always like to say that. We're living today in different times. It's a cliche. Times, you know, what is this? He's adding a word. You can't deny he's adding a word to the Pasuk. Lachaira. And he does this. If you know, again, notice, he does a lot. We have to pay more attention to this. And then he says, in the midway, he adds another word. He adds another word here on the tchum. It doesn't say the word tchum in the pasuk. Where did he get that from? Bimid bira, in the desert, divit chum, on the boundary, shevet Yehuda. Why did he say that? David's own shevet, but it says on the boundary. What do you mean the boundary? Bitchum, in the boundary. In the boundary. What does that mean? He's saying something very big, which we're missing some information to appreciate the depth of what he's saying. Doesn't say the word tchum in the it just says bimidbar, Yehuda. Bimid, you don't know what the word midbar is in Hebrew. You don't know Hebrew. You only know Aramaic. So the word is bimadbira. Oh, bimadbira. Now I know. Desert. That now I know. If you just come to translate the words, okay. So what does it mean? Devitchum shevet Yehuda. There's an enormous amount of content. If you learn unkelus, see, you know, only we're fortunate because we learn in the afternoon, we learn unkelus. With Meir, I learned with Chavrusa, with Blazer. Ablaze is number one. Ablaze the Bachi. And May, we learn in the afternoon, 7:15, you learn Unkelus. And you get it after you learn, you spend a little time learning Unkelus, you come to realize Unkelus, he, in those few little words on the side of the Chumash, he's packing in there, hoo-hoo, he's packing in there volumes and volumes and volumes and little teeny nuances. And there aren't all that many sermon Unkelus, but we use a very good sefer called Me'at Tzori, who was a Malachite. He died not that long ago, and he did quite a job on bringing out what Unkelus is trying to say, and it opens up mamish worlds of insight into Chumash. And now when you look at the Targumim, the other Targumim, Yonasan ben Uziel, Targum Yerushalmi, and Now you go to Tehillim and Kisuvim, which have its own collection of Targumim. It's also eye-opening. Targum, you got to be very careful, though, because there are many Targumim, and some of them, I don't know if I'm saying is true, are questionable as to the sanctity, the Ruach HaKodesh that was invested in these Targum. If you go online and talk about Targum, you'll come across many Targum. There's a whole collection of them. And you gotta be careful, who wrote these Targum? How come in our Misora, you never heard of these Targum? You never heard of them. There's a whole collection of them. And these are ancient Targum. And Imamish, no one talks about them. None of the Mepharshim, ever quote them. And you do some research, who are these people? I don't know, but there's not. We are familiar with pretty much three Targumim: Onkelos, Targum Yonas ben Uziel, Targum Yerushalmi. Then on Kisuvim, there is what we call, Targum Yosef. They call it Targum Yosef. I don't know if that's it's a little bit. But there's more. There are more Targum, and you have to be very, very careful to know who, when, what. Who composed those Targum? Who wrote those Targumim? And what are their sources? And the question: how come no one ever? How come you don't see in the Mepharshim? They quote all the time. Rashi quotes Targum, and all the Rishonim, they quote Targum. They don't quote these Targumim. Well, they never had them. They didn't have access, or they knew about them and they were just, you know, they're apocryphal. They weren't necessarily accepted to be part of the Mesora of the Perush of the Torah. If you want to learn about Targum, probably one of the major work is Torah Shlema by Rav Mendel Kasher. He wrote a kuntres that is unbelievable. It was an eye opener for me. In the back of one of his volumes, they know they used to have little volumes. There's a very, very nice kuntres. It's pretty big. It's a whole sefer to itself about Targum, all of the Targumim. And it's just, we should maybe one day even learn it inside together. It's very, very enlightening. All right, now with that being said, the Targum added here two words, Bi'idan and the word Devitchum. Let's now jump into this Mizmar. Elokim Keli Ata. Now, if you notice, there are a lot of expressions here that we're familiar with from other Mizmarim. It's almost like someone came along and was Melakate, the most beautiful expressions that are found in other Mizmarim and brought them together in one place. And he says, Elokim Keli Ata, you are my God. Who said that? Esther said that. Mizmar Chafes, Keli Keno, I didn't say Ata. Lama Zaftani, okay. But Elokim Keli, Lash of Kel, you are my God, Ata, you are. Now here we have another word, Ashachareko. That's a hard word to say. A-sha-cha-re-ko. There's a dot in the chaf. And where do you put the emphasis? There are a lot of different, there's a nesseg and there's two trups. So you gotta go put it, whenever you have two
trups. Amazing, he uses aleph, 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 aleph.
Oh, I didn't notice that. One, two, three, four. Four alephs, right? Four alephs.
Four alephs.
Omar, Oyev, Erdoif, Asig, Achalek. There are five Alephs. Hey, Alofen. And then it says, Achalek, Omar, Oyev, Erdoif, Asig, Achalek, Sholol, Tim, Le'emo, Nafshi, Tof, Shin, Lamed. That was the year of the Iraq War. It was saying that. Hey, Alofen, 5,000. Tof, Shin,
Lamed.
That was, what year was that, 1990?
Tof, Shin, Lamed is 1970.
No, go to the next word, the next word. Omar, Oyev, Erdoif, Asig, Achalik, Sholol, Tibla, Emo, Navshi, Orik. Orik, Nun Aleph. Nun Aleph is 1991?
1991.
What was 1991? The Iraq War. The Persian Gulf War. So when the Persian Gulf War broke out, everyone said, oh, Mashiach is here. Mirum is in the Oz Yosher. Omar, Oyev, Erdoif, Asig, Achalek. Five Alephs. Hey, Alofim. Orik, Harbi, Torishemo. What is that? I said? Orik. The next four words are Tof, Shin, Nun, Aleph. 700 and 51. 751 is 5,000. 751 is 19, our counting was 1991. That's when a whole world, you know, everyone was, remember those days? A whole different type of world in those days. Whole different world. Mashiach's coming. Where's Mashiach? Where's Mashiach? So next time someone tells you, oh, there's a meteorite shower, Mashiach is coming. Don't get excited. There's a solar eclipse. Okay, the solar eclipse. There's this, there's that. Hayoim im bekoiloi tishmo. You don't need any of that. You do teshuva, Mashiach will come today, right now. And if you don't do teshuva, all this simonim muvhakim won't make one bit of a difference. It all depends on one thing. Hayoim im bekoiloi tishmo. So here we have over here this very hard word. Rav Kalman is saying very good. There are four alephs. Aleph, 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 aleph. So it says, Elokim keli ata ashachareko. What does that word mean? It seems to come from the word shachar. Shachar means the morning, the early morning. Alois hashachar. And it's a borrowed word. In this context, it means yearning, drisha. It's another word to add to the list over here of nichsof, teshuka, ta'ava. And here is ashachare ka. From Machol was here, you tell medrash shoicher toif. There's a medrash on tilim. It's called medrash shoicher. What does it mean, shoicher toif? A good yearning, a drisha. And it's the same exact word. I yearn for you. What you want to do, what means something important to you, you do early in the morning. Alois hashachar. At the crack of dawn, you're up doing what really is important to you. Now we have another expression. Tzoma'o l'cho nafshi. My neshama is thirsty for you, Hashem.
That's from the song, right?
Yeah.
He copyrighted. I know, David, you know, he doubly plagiarized a lot of things, David. We always say. He played the, what's the big deal to him? He just opened up the siddur and he copied everything from the siddur and he made the tillim. Okay, now comes a word that every single commentator on this page, this is like mamash unique. If you want, what is unique about this mizmor? They know every single mefarish on this page has a need to tell you that this word is unique. You will not find this word anywhere in the entire Tanakh. I don't remember ever seeing every single mefarish make that point. Amol, you have a word that's unique, and you know one of the mefarishim will say ein loy chover. This word does not have a companion. It's a unique word. But for every single mefarish on this page to get all worked up, and say, oh, this word, I don't know. I looked in my dictionary. I can't find this word. This word is one of a kind, and when you have a word like that. That is very, very fun because then you really can play with it because there's no makar. You don't even know what it means. There's nothing to compare it to. Okay, this collect all the words, and some show must have done this, to collect all the words in Tanakh that the Mefarshim say, Ein loy chaver. There's no match. Completely unique word. There's no shoresh that we're familiar with, and we have to understand its meaning based on its context only. And what's a koma? With a mapeke, koma. What does the word mean? Who ever heard of that word? Koma? Stop anyone you see today on the street and ask them, can you please tell me the Hebrew translation of the word koma? With a mapeke. I don't know. And no one knows because there is no comparison, there's no equivalent. And therefore we have no choice but to understand the word based on its context. If every single expression in this pasuk is referring to a yearning, a drisha, a passionate desire to connect to Hashem, it has to be that this word as well means the same thing. It means a yearning. Koma l'cha, this way, my flesh, it yearns for you. Be'eret tzia, now this l'cha is going back on the midbar, where David over here is currently located, in the desert, in a dry land. Ve'oyef, in tiredness. Bili moyim, without water. Three words, which, I mean, these three words pretty much are saying the same thing. Three different ways to describe a desert. In the desert, tziyah, it's arid. It's oyef. You're tired. What's tired? The land is tired, or you're tired. I always say the word oyef refers to. I always say it refers to the person. The person is tired. Bli mayim. Bli mayim. It seems from this pasuk, we even look at the mafarshim, something very unique. The word oyef means the land is tired.
Right.
That's not your typical translation. Whoever used the word like that, oyef means I'm tired. It's a word that applies to a human being. You don't go refer to the land. The land, the earth is the earth. The earth, it's dry, it's wet, it's this, that. You don't say the land is tired. No, you do say. There's such a principle. The land is a living organism. Eretz Yisrael is a living organism. And sometimes the land spits out people and the land absorbs. Okay, today is Hey Iyar. Talk about the land. The land has brought, accepted Klal Yisrael back into its Sviva. And during the time when Klal Yisrael was in Oisim Ritzon Shel Makom, the land was alive. It spit the people out. It says in the Pesukim many, many times. The land is not going to tolerate your Averos. And the land itself will spit you out. There are Pesukim that say this. And then the land takes you back, absorbs you. It takes you back in. Sometimes the land is excited, and sometimes the land is tired. So the Midbar is describing an oyef b'limayim. I'll give you a very good example of Simcha Salavetchik Shlita. He now lives in Muncie. He used to once show me this incredible Ramban, who shows that, you know, when we say the word chosin kala, what does it mean chosin? Chosin, the bridegroom. Kala is the bride. The word, the average person, the word chosin is a human being who at this moment in time is in the process of getting married. The Shiva Smeha Mishneh. I worked to a rabbi, someone I know, he asked me if I could find out if he made a vart. And he desperately wanted to shave. The father of the groom wanted to shave during Sefira. So he asked me, go do me a favor and ask around if there's any heter to shave at a vart of one of my children during Sefira. Ask around. Well, Chayra, it's awesome, but maybe, I don't know, you know, there are a lot of, you know, you're allowed to shave Shabbos or Shchodesh, right? You're allowed to shave Mishneh Berurah. You're allowed to shave a bris. If you're making a bris, you can shave the father can shave, the mohel can shave, the sandi can shave, and the baby could shave also. Did Esav, you know, Esav was born, you know, asui, he didn't have a bris, but if Esav would have had a bris, if he would have been born during Sefira, would Esav be allowed to shave for his own bris? Okay? And the opinion haben, there's a guy in the sugya. Is there such a thing? At least it's found in Shulchan Aruch. At least they talk about it. This is machloikis opinion, I bet. Whatever it is, at least they talk about it. They talk about it. It's somewhere in Shulchan Aruch to be found. It's somewhere in the Meis Lekelim to be found. What is the halacha during Sfira? Can you shave Shabbos Halama, Shabbos Rosh Chodesh? Can you shave for a bris? Can you shave a pinyin aben? Is there anywhere in Shulchan Aruch or the Meis who talk about an engagement party? You make tanoim, you don't make tanoim? So I asked around, and everyone I asked told me, no. No, you can shave at Davar HaOvod. You go to work for money. There are heterim to shave. There are all these different things. But they all came back and they said to me, you know, there are a lot of heterim to shave, but I'm afraid to tell you that for an engagement party, even if you have tanoim, even if you sign the tanoim, you cannot, there is no heter to shave. Just for that alone, there's no heter to shave. And one rabbi said to me, an engagement party in Shulchan Aruch is called a mishudoch and a mishudeches. It's not called chosn kala. You have to define the situation. Nowhere can you call an engagement party, even if you sign the tanoim, can you call this ceremony, this matzav, the people involved in this service are a chatan and kala. No way. The most you can call them is the mishudoch and the mishudeches. And nowhere does it say any heter, anywhere that we know of, that a mishudoch and a mishudeches is a simcha that qualifies like a bris milah or even a pinyan ben, that there is a different halachic status that changes the equation. But if you are chosen and kala, oh, that's already different. If you get married right before Rosh Chodesh and now the Shiva Simei HaMishneh go into Svira, they are called a chosan and a kala. Oh, first week, so now we can talk business. Now we can get involved. So the point I'm trying to make over here is we look at the term chosan and kala to be referring to human beings who are currently engaged in this process of marriage, and in Shulchan Aruch they have a unique status. Last week's parsha, Tazria Mitzora, Uviyoim Hero Oisboy, Rashi says, you do not inspect a nega during the Shiva Simei HaMishneh, because the Chosan and Kala are called, it's their holiday, it's a drush Uviyoim. So if you are in a status of Chatan Kala, Chosan Kala, you're in a different halachic status. There's no inspection of the Negoyim. Okay, now, why am I telling you that? Because Rav Simcha Zadar showed me from a Ramban, that's not the only way you use the word Chosan Kala. You use the word Chosan Kala, it's a form of Simcha. Can anyone here, or anyone we know, explain to us the details? There are 10 different forms of Simcha. Asher Bora, Sosoin Simcha, Chosan Kala, Gila, Rina, Ditza, Chedva, Ava, Achva, Shalom, Reyos. 10 words. Is there anyone here can explain to us the exact difference in joy, in emotion between these 10 terms? I don't think so. I don't think there's anyone today out there that I know of that can explain to us the nuances in defining the human condition and going into a person's mind and understanding the nuances of joy between these 10 different expressions. Now, however, I think 99.99% of the population will tell you that even though there are 10 expressions, it's not really 10, it's only really 8. Only really 8. Asher bara sosoin simcha. Now, the next two, delete. Just, right, not, chos and kala, you know, get rid of those two, because that's not it. Gila, rina, ditza, chedva, avav, yachva, shalom, v'reyot.
Avav, yachva, shalom, v'reyot is also not simcha.
It's an emotion. Yeah. It's an emotion, okay, but it's an emotion. Okay, by 10
home,
emotions.
When they come home, it starts.
When they come home, war begins. World War III breaks out when they come home. But they're emotion. They're emotional states of being. All of those, but two of them stick out like a sore thumb. Chos and kala. Because chos and kala are not emotional states of being. Chos and kala are a definition. They're nouns. Of human beings who are getting married. So Rav Simcha Zal showed me a Ramban, I think it's a Hagdama to one of his Svarim, around with many Svarim. Chosan, the word, the real meaning of Chosan Kala is an emotional state. A person cannot, a woman can be in a state of Chosan. A woman can be in a state of Ava. A man can be in an emotional state of joy called kala. We are mistaken to think that the word chosan kala means a bride, groom, and a kala, a bride. We're mistaken. We are totally wrong. The real pure definition, even though there's no such thing as a real pure, is the word chosan kala is a mental state of being that any human being in this world can enter. What is that mental state of being? I have no idea. It's obviously a happy state of being. And just like when you'll be able to figure out the difference between the state of being of sosan and simcha, ava, achva, reyos, gila, rina, ditza, chedva, when you'll be able to figure out the difference in those frames of mind, that state of being, then you'll be able to figure out what exactly is the state of being of joy called chosan and kala. But it's not referring to a person. It's referring to a state of mind. And a child can be in a state of kala, and whether he's a boy or a girl, and a person that's not married can be in this state of being called chosan and kala. We have borrowed those terms, which are states of mind, and we've borrowed it and stamped a bridegroom and a bride with the term chosan kala. We ganovim. Chazal aganovim. Chas Hashem. That they've taken these terms, and because they need to define a person who's currently within the Shiva Asmei Mishteh of getting involved in the midst of Periya Urevia, they've taken a state of mind and they've used it, borrowed it, to use it to define this human being. We're going to call him a chosan, and we're going to call this woman a kala. But that's not really what it means. The word chosan kala really means a state of mind. This is what the Ramban writes in the Hakdama to one of his svarim. I don't remember which sefer. I remember he actually showed it to me. He opened it up and he showed me, read it to me. The Ramban says there are 10 different expressions. That's it. Asher bar chosan v'simcha, chosan v'kala, gila, rina, ditza, chedva, avav, yachav, shalom, v'reyos. Every other word is a state of mind. So what is Chos and Kala doing? You created these beings. It's Bashert. Hashem, Bar, you created Chos and Kala? No, you didn't. Hashem created human beings. Bereishis, Bar, Lekim, Eitha, Shrami, Esaretz, Vayiv, Lekim, Esa, Adam, Ofram, Inu, Adama. Hashem didn't create Chos and Kala. Hashem brought about, you know, Hashkacha, Pratis, they met each other, and they made a decision to get married and become a Chos and Kala. Hashem didn't create them. It's not what it means. Why are there 8 expressions of joy and in the middle you stick in 2 people? What? It doesn't make any sense. That's right, the Ramban says. That's not what it means. It means the real translation of Chosan Kal is a state of being. And we've just abused it. And not abused, but the Chazal have taken these words and because we just need a term to simply define a human being, a male and a female, that are currently engaged in the process of matrimony, so we've stuck it on them as a label, but it's really a borrowed term. Why am I telling you this? It's the same thing here with the word oyef. We commonly translate the word oyef to mean I. It's a human being. A human being, the at. By Amalek, Asher Karcha Baderech, Vayizani V'chokol Hanech Shulim Achanecha, V'yat Oyef V'yogea. You, the person, were Oyef. So we believe, we've come to believe in our minds, that the word Oyef can only be used in reference to a human being. An Oyef means a person who is a human being is tired. But it wouldn't be proper language skills to say that the land is oyef. Doesn't make you don't. It's not you don't know Hebrew. That's not language. No, you see, we. It's not true. The word oyef is a state of existence that can apply to the earth, to a domain, and it can apply to human beings. This pasuk clearly over here says a land that's tziyah. V'oyef b'lima. If word number 1, word number 3 clearly define the state of the earth, of the doimim, it has to then be that the word oyef applies to the earth as well. All right. Let's really get the mesudas and wind down the mesudas. Keli ata me'olam from time immemorial. Ata, you have been keli. That's a very powerful expression. 99% of the time in Tanakh it says Kel. We stand back. Kel, Hashem is God. Here it's a passionate term. Keli, you are my God. Lachain, therefore, Ed Roshcha, I will pursue you. I will seek you. Tsama, I am thirsty. Misave ani lecha katsame el hamam. Someone who's thirsty. Be'eretz tziyah kamo ha'olich. Be'eretz tziyah ve'oyef. Mokoim she'ein mayim. See, the Mitzvah says it clearly. Oyef is not going on the person. It's referring to a mokoim. Ki oz me'oid yisav Elohem. Okay, look at the Mitzvah Tzion. He says, what's this unusual word? Ashachareko inyan drisha. To seek. K'may shoycher toif. Medrish shoycher toif. A good yearning. Koma inyin cheshek v'savo v'ein loy doime, there is no equivalent of this word in the entire Tanakh. V'oyev, return lema, yivei shoch, ilu, mitzitzav, lemaim, v'odem, hayoyev. He explains it's the earth. It's, he gives a mashal like a person who's thirsty. The earth is thirsty. Look at Rashi. Rashi pasuk beis, ashach hareka, avakesh the edroish luchokmo v'shichartani v'eineni. I sought you out. You sought me out. V'eineni, and I was not to be found. I was sought out, and I was not to be found. Imata tishacher. El Kelif, you will seek out God. Tzama lucha nafshi, tzama, v'sosoev, ani lavo yilecha beveis tefil losicha. David says, I'm yearning to come to the base tefila. Koma lucha v'sodi, l'shon ta'ava, v'ein loy dim yain. There is no equivalent of the word for the word koma. Let's look at the Malbim, the Be'er HaMilois. Just jump to the word over here, koma, loy, nimsa, loy, dugma. There is no other example. So I have different words. Dome, dimyoin, dugma. There are only three different words to define the fact that this word does not exist anywhere else. Now the Malbim has gone where no man has gone before. And he says, no, I'm going to say a bold suggestion that I found like an equivalent. It comes from the word kama, which means much, like quantity. Kama, hamoira al shiur hakamos, a measure of quantity. Oy hadugma kimo, or it means like, equivalent. Sheteshukas habasar hu kimo teshukas hanefesh. My basar is equivalent to my nesham. He's trying to suggest the word kama is kimo. Okay, it's very difficult to understand what this means over here. My boss, just like a person's bosar, has a yearning for food, for water, so too my neshama has a yearning for spirituality. Kamo, or kama, it means a quantity. Just like there's a yearning for a given quantity of gashmias, there's a yearning for a quantity of ruchnias. What else? Let's see over here. Look, let's see over here what it says in the Perish HaRid. The Rid. Tzama b'shvilcha nafshi koma ein loy doime. There's no equivalent. Mefarish lufi mekayma yave lufi mekayma. What does it say in the Mincha Shai? Koma b'mapikei ve'ein loy chover. Got no friends. Ein loy friends. Ibn Ezra. In Ibn Ezra, let's see apostolic base. The word of koma. Nafshi, sorry, where's the word over here? Shacharecha, okay. Shachatoy b'gud shachar. Tzamalucha v'hinei nafshi b'smirim l'mayim uvesari. My boss so yavesh ki ein l'milas koma chover b'mikra. No friends, no friends. Okay, it's a lonely pasuk here. And what is over here in the Sipurno? Koma lucha b'sari b'eretz siyav v'ayev b'li mayim. Kimo ma shebesori choya toiv lucha shetigolel loyishim biyoyis beretz tzia vuoyev etzamei sham blimam. It seems he doesn't want to say abshat. Kimo, it seems that the Sipurno and the Malbim, even the Malbim lived much later, much way past the Sipurno. Did he see the Sipurno? He says kimo. It seems to say that he learns the word koma means kimo, like the Malbim's second shot, the second shot. He does have a friend. Is that it? I think we did all the mefarshim on the page. I'm sure there are more. What is over here? What is over here in the Targum? Targum over the word kama pasuk beis elokat tukfi ant. You are my strength. Okay, akum betzal. I get up early in the morning. See, he learns the word ashachareka different than all the mefarshim. I get up early. Shachar. All the mefarshim on the page, they learn the word ashachareka mean I yearn. Medrash shoycher toif. That's not what it is in the Targum. The Targum says tzafra, akum, I arise early in the morning. Doesn't mean yearn. I mean, you do early in the morning, but it's a very different focus. A very different focus. He says two words, akum b'tzafra kodamach. I rise up early in the morning before you, Hashem. And then he says tzichoyas lucha nafshi. And then he says word regig. What does it mean regig? Regig. I don't know. We gotta look this up. I'm sure so. I didn't look at my English. I have the English translation. Let's see what they say over here on online. There's a very good English translation. I don't even know if it was written by a Jew. It could be written by a guy, but he seems to know what he's saying. For him. Regig. What does the word of regig mean? Regig lecha? Visri. You got to go find out what that word means. Regig. Okay? So basically, this is a very unique word. Okay? You don't have this often where almost every single commentary on the page says, Ein loy dimyoin doime dugma chover. I like the one chover. Ein loy chover. Has no friends. I mean, like, I remember when I was looking, I have Israeli nephews and nieces, and I remember they were fighting these kids. And the kid finally said to the other one, Ani loy chover. Ani loy chover. Hashem is in lechover. Hashem is one of a kind. Okay, dugma dimyon doime chover. Chover. All the different ways. It's very funny to look at that. There's all the different ways. The old mafarshim, they want to tell you that there's no equivalent. They all have their own unique, rich vocabulary.
Spelled
Mole,
but
Tiva, the
Tiyu Kadoshim,
the Yuli,
is
Chosek.
You could be Kadosh,
but
not like me.
No, right, exactly. Quill, Hashem's Kadosh is
Rashi,
right.
Twice in the parsha, at the end of the parsha,
okay.
It's the same Chosek Mole again.
Okay, let's take a short